everybody. Good evening, honorable members in particular. Let me thank you again and again and again, because we've had a very heavy day. We've just concluded the House plenary, and I'm sure some of us, just the first thing that decided was to take the bus and just go and take a rest. Unfortunately, for some of the little devils like us, there's still work to be done. There's still a country to run. I welcome everyone, particularly from the liquid fuels sector, to another session where we are trying our best to make a humble contribution to ensure that at the end of the day, at some stage, we can sit together and smile about the extent to which we've made genuine attempts to transform the liquid fuel industry. Maybe it would be just helpful to make some introduction. I know we started a bit late because there was another committee here who, when they saw an empty committee room close to the house, they just sneaked in and took some of our time. Apologies for that. I would prefer people just indicate the organizations unless they came as individuals. If I could just quickly start on my side. Just for us to have a sense as to who's around. Thank you.
My name is Lunga Sagi. I'm from SADA.
I'm Tanya Fanielis from SIPAW.
I'm Samuel Satolo from SIPAW.
I'm Bongani Mthombeni Mola. I'm representing WASA.
Yep. I think if I can just ask people in that zone to give the full name. I know South Africans like acronyms. What's WASA?
Women in Oil and Energy, South Africa.
SIPAW?
Chemical, Energy, Paper, Printing, Wood and Allied Workers Union.
Michel Debussy from SAPIA, South African Petroleum Industry Association.
Nabuza Mbuyisa, also from SAPIA.
Rita Zipoz at BP.
I'm a Punch Flaro, SAPIA, South African Petroleum Industry Association.
Good evening. Good evening, I'm Bonga Zungu from Petro SA. Dion Lomo from Gwande Petroleum.
Sipho Babisa from Engine Petroleum.
This is Zaman Bray, Engine.
Zimbini Zwane from Sasol.
German Hydro Alpha Sasol Limited.
Ray McGuire from Earthlight Africa and Project ICBI 2030.
Ivan Muga from PMG.
Takiala from the SEF group.
Manir, what's SEF?
Central Energy Fund.
And you?
Paul Editara from Standard Bank.
The money people, that's good.
Paul Matthias from Ibiza Petroleum.
Wahid Patel from Ethical Consulting.
Noor Kapdi from Kapdi Twala Law Firm.
Let's come down the line.
Mashudu Romano from African Legend Investment.
Nosinda Tena from Litemba Investments.
FC Lamprecht, South African Petroleum Retailers Association.
The lady right in the back.
Misal Jappi, Ipiko Political Consulting.
Aubrey McKenzie, Imbil Energy.
Mpumele Nochume, NM Resource Management.
Mahin Monsami, Catholic Liquid.
Come again.
Ian Munsami from a company called Gas to Liquid. Gas to Liquid.
Thabo Ramanamani from NERSA, National Energy Regulators.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Just
we have a sense as to who's I really appreciate that we have a quite a balance and a wide spread of people from academics and even as a law firm and it's also Standard Bank, that's from the banking sector. I wish your other colleagues could have made offers to come and the various companies so I'm sure you'll hear that we also decided to invite workers as well, because at the end of the day there are people who switch on the machine at 6 a.m. in the morning, they switch them off at 10 p.m. and they are part of this effort to transform this sector. I remember there are just a few quickies. The highlight in terms of Parliament's contribution to this sector or to this industry revolves primarily around the Liquid Fuels Charter, which we know. Oh, by the way, apologies for this. The department could not make it. Some movement occurred, within the department. So the person who was supposed to come and make a presentation, honorable, just had to drop everything and attend to that. I hope we'll understand that. I know it's a little bit of a blow, particularly from people who are supposed to be quite central to what we're doing. The Liquid Fuels Charter, to quite an extent, it epitomizes our attempts to have this industry turned around in the South African context. We'll remember that in 2010, I'm sure that was year number 10 of its existence, this very committee, the Portfolio Committee for Energy, young as it was, held public hearings to examine its effectiveness, the extent to which it can be refined, and up to now we've been, like you as well as the Portfolio Committee, been anxiously waiting to get the department to present to us a refined draft. Unfortunately, that has not been forthcoming. Up to now, we only a couple of months ago received an audit of the Black Economic Empowerment in this sector, which the department did present to us, and that's what they were going to do today as well. That's unfortunate, but I don't think it's a transmission, because at the end of the day we still have to gather again, whether in this form or in a different form, to address and process the revised Liquid Fuels Charter, hopefully next year. Also, when we took a visit to Tequin early this year in January, we also had held an energy stakeholders meeting, whereby our focus at that stage was to see what role can play on strategy management of strategic fuels. Of course, that was also influenced by the fact that as a committee we did visited the refineries in Durban. It was a very instructive meeting. Quite a number of pertinent things were raised by the department in terms of monitoring and enforcement of policy, security of supply, planning and coordination with regards to shutdowns and startups in particular, for preventing benefits of competition and beneficiation. Of course, also the various speakers at times raised the issue of need for ensuring that a part of transformation, the playing fields should be level, because at this stage and time they're not. The extent to which black economic empowerment, in particular as progress, black economic empowerment was effective, was placed under close scrutiny, access to tankage for black-owned companies was raised. From the committee's side, we emphasized the need to monitor policy implementation. NERSA was there, made his contribution, particularly around the storage facility. Quite a number of things. And of course, there were a number of other things that we committed ourselves, which we still need to look into. But one of them was that we should have a workshop with state-owned companies, such as the PRESA, Transnet, Strategic Resources Fund, to align their activities. I think given that honorable members, they've reported their work, we should follow up on that. We then, as a committee, felt that we should, at some stage, once again, call the various role players and stakeholders just to share, as an ongoing engagement, what our views are on the transformation of this industry. Of course, without any doubt, in preparation for the presentation of the revised charter at whatever stage is going to be. And if you see, once again, the invitation has been quite focused to pertinent institutions, SASTA, because it's one of the key players in the area of black economic empowerment, particularly supplier development. That also links up with WUSA, particularly women empowerment. We'd like to see the extent to which that has been done, both in terms of quantity and quality. That would welcome. And this time, as I have said, you know, we'd like to see, hear from the union, SIPAU, a trade union perspective of how do they see transformation in this industry. And I'll take the SAPIA as a key player. Will always be expected to be here. If we had had more time, we would have included the retailers, and I understand the Wholesalers Association is also emerging, so we would have included them. But unfortunately, we have limited time. In fact, I've even done more than enough even now. Ladies and gentlemen, honorable members, I trust you'll appreciate one thing. What we are trying to do here is to be influenced as public representatives. But at the end of the day, we know that once we're influenced, we will in turn influence the players in this industry and at the same time the economy in the country. Take into account what the department will present to us down the line. And in that way, we are taking this exercise pretty seriously. It may not be producing or indicating any results for now, but I trust and hope that we'll just have the tenacity to and the keenness to ensure that at least sometime next year we should ensure that the fruits of this exercise in January this year, in November as well as that year, all that outcome will have a cumulative effect, particularly on an instrument such as the liquid fuel charter and even other areas as well, not just the charter. There probably are a number of other areas that have to be taken on board if we talk about a transformation of the industry. Regulation, legislation, research and development, quite a number of other things as well. I've done enough preaching. Can I keep quiet now? Somebody's phone, if there's anyone who's lost a cell phone, the law enforcement agents have been honest and conscientious enough. But anyway, there it is coming. It's going to be put here for anyone to pick up later. Shall we then, according to the agenda, allow Safda to take us through? Nomzanage, unfortunately, we just have to be quite tight with timekeeping. Over to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, honorable members, colleagues, ladies and gentlemen. I'll try and be very conscious of time. I will only talk about three things. I will talk about the origins and the purpose of the establishment of SASDA. I will talk about the journey of SASDA and the challenges of SASDA as well. SASDA really was incorporated to implement the Department of Energy transformation objectives. Our journey really began with the Energy White Paper of 1998, which laid down the basis for broad BEE in the petroleum petrochemical sector. I think members of SAPIA responded to the imperatives of the White Paper by putting together what was called the Petroleum and Liquid Fuel Charter. In particular, the charter had three objectives. One was to redress the historical inequalities of the past, to accelerate empowerment in the liquid fuel industry, and to stimulate growth of SMEs. 3 years later, DME instructed Prestrasi to establish a supply development pilot project, the result of which was satisfactory, and the national program in 2005 was established. That is basically the story of the establishment of SASDA. Coupled with that, what also gave rise to the ambit of SASDA was our legislative mandate, which really comes for the Petroleum Amendment Act. Section 2B, subsection 2C, and section 2C of that act really gives the petroleum controller power to look into the companies that apply for licenses that they do comply to the liquid fuel charter. In that, in consideration application, in terms of that act, the petroleum controller shall promote the advancement of the companies. That is basically the first part of that act. The second piece of legislation that gives rise to SASDA is the BEE Act, which really promotes the empowerment of black people and establishment of transformation charters. I think we in our petrochemical industry, we do have one, which is the Petroleum and Liquid Fuel Charter, which has now become law by virtue of being annexed into the Petroleum Product Amendment Act. And then part of us promoting SMMEs, we also come into the National Small Enterprise Act of 102 of 1996. That is basically the legislative environment in which SASDA operates. The vision of and mission of SASDA really are there to facilitate the development and transformation of black SMMEs within the petroleum and liquid fuel sector. Our values, our strategic objectives really are to coordinate the existing supply development efforts by collaborating with all the participating companies and fully utilizing the common supply database. I think the regular excuse that we get from big business is that they do not find a black supplier that can supply certain goods and services. We should say these suppliers are there. If you want them, you must come to SASDA, we'll give them to you. We are implementing and managing supply development programs for certain participating companies. We are actively sourcing black suppliers with particular emphasis on women, youth, and people with disability according to industry requirements. We do collaborate, you know, with similar complementary initiatives like the DTI, the IDC, UNIDO, NEF, and so on. We assist in facilitation of the establishment of new SMMEs within the renewable sector and bioenergy with all the alternative sources of energy. We assist SMMEs within the crude procurement space. That is basically our broad strategic objectives. What have we done so far? I think I will share some views around the result of the pilot project, the development of SASDA, and some milestones.
When we analyzed the pilot project that we did at Petro SA, we essentially found similar or common, obstacles or inhibiting factors that makes SMMEs not to succeed. One of them is the lack of capacity and ability of them to serve more than one supplier. This has to do with capacity and all of those things. And most of these things are intertwined, interrelated, because they all come to one thing. There's already lack of skills, lack of access to information, lack of access to capital. There's always been the risk or the challenge of dominant entrenched incumbent suppliers that dominate the market and do not open up for smaller entities. Funding is still a problem. There's perception within the oil companies that if they buy goods from B suppliers, the goods will be of a freer quality. And there's also fear of disruptions to operations if we employ this particular B company. So what have we concluded from our findings is that we need to facilitate skills training to meet industry standards. We need to create a marketplace where industry could interact with BE suppliers so that they don't say that there are no BE suppliers who can supply those goods and services. And of course, we need to analyze the risk and see how we can achieve equilibrium when we have to do with the risk of operations. So what we have done, we have developed a program. In our program, we do mentorship and coaching of suppliers. We assist them with technical support. We do technical and business training. We do assessments of suppliers in terms of their performance. We assist them to access raw materials. We facilitate them access to financial support. And we do project management. The initiative that SASDA has done so far with the oil companies at the first quadrant is that in the process now we are developing 20 companies. Oil companies have invested 17 million in the development of those suppliers. Those suppliers as a collective, they've got the potential to create value to the tune of 223 million a year. They can create 170 permanent jobs. 35 shoulders, 20% of which is women. We are also starting with a project with the refineries managers. This project has been in the program now for at least 2 years. We are wanting to develop 15 black suppliers within the painting and insulation, scaffolding and tank dislodging. The value that will be created by this project for those 15 companies will be 75 million. We've got a potential of creating 50 jobs, 20 shareholders, of which again 20% will be women. We are assisting Turner and Townsend in their application with the equity equivalent with the Department of Trade and Industry. They have invested 2 million rand in that project to assist these 9 companies. That project will create 80 million rand for those companies, create 70 permanent jobs, 30 shareholders and 25% of which is women. Those are the current projects that SASDA is doing. If you count, is 35, 9 is about 40-something, 44 suppliers. In a nutshell, these are the two issues that we are dealing with in terms of how it impairs the transformation of these suppliers. There's obstacles and then there are risks. The obstacles, we all know, skills, opportunities, capital, information. I think those are the issues that are common with all the suppliers which we are trying to address with our own program. And then on the other side, there's risk, whether it's a real risk or perceived risks, but it is also something that we need to address in terms of the skills, in terms of disruption to operations, quality issues, and so on. When we looked at the success of SASDA over the 5 years that we've been in existence, we came to this conclusion that we need to have a look at the past and see how we as a nation have performed against our own targets of transformation in terms of all the 7 elements of the charter. When we look at professional procurement and enterprise development, really we have not done well there. I know that some people will say that we have done well, but the reality is that we have not done well there. Equity, I think a lot of deals has been done around equity and management control, and I think there it would appear that we have achieved what we wanted to achieve. Skills development, employment equity, we've done a lot there, but we haven't quantified what we have done, and I think we need to quantify that. Social economic development, a lot of companies when BE came about, all of them did that, and I think we need to celebrate what we've done well, and obviously give attention to what we haven't done well. And I think the net effect of all of those things is that there is narrow empowerment that has happened. Incumbent suppliers just sell minority stakes to big partners just to have the compliance ticks, no development tick list, and no access to opportunities. The old companies which were still are still there, and they still have entrenched industrial relationships, and there's just no way that you can break through that barrier. And it's a worrying factor for us because we do not then deliver on our mandate that we have. I won't deal with that one. And I think it's unfortunate that DOE is not here today, but I think this slide really is for them. What we're saying here, we're saying that we need DOE to look at the regulatory environment so that it can support the mandate of SASDA. One of the major issues with SASDA is the funding of SASDA. I think this is one thing that we really need to tackle as soon as we can. When SASDA was established, it was funded by the oil companies. Now it is funded solely by DOE, and we need to have a new funding model for SASDA so that, you know, the mandate of SASDA could be fully realized. Clearly, the alignment of the LFC with the DTI codes that has commenced, and I was hoping that the DOE will share with us the finding of the LFC review. Clearly, we need to measure what we're doing, and we need to measure the success of the industry against the targets. We need to look at the consequences for non-participation. I mean, it looks like transformation is a voluntary imperative to certain companies, and they don't look at it as an imperative that needs to be done to drive transformation. So that also is a challenge for us. We need to have some kind of a set-aside dispensation. I know in other countries, you know, they will say that goods and services to the value less than, say, 20 million will be procured from SMMEs, and then anything above that will go to an open tender and so on. But I don't think we are doing that to support these entities, because what has happened is that these entities, when they've got a tender for 3 years, after 3 years, they are dead in the water because there's no continuity, there's no sustainability, and it's worrying for us. To the oil companies and state-owned enterprises, we say we really need your support so that we can make transformation a very important thing. There must be clarity on crude and jet fuel procurement. We do not believe that these two things were excluded from the charter. We believe that these were the very essence of the charter. We would want to see some relaxation of the barriers to entry for participating and create an enabling and supporting environment for BE companies. And I thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Without any waste, let's move over to Sapia. Perhaps people understand, amongst us, they are sneaking a few things, they come back. I was under pressure that we need to start. One of the reasons why we're doing this is that one of the core functions of Parliament is to facilitate public participation. But obviously, I trust and hope that as we are here, we can only increase in numbers in this journey. As Sasta has already indicated, that what is left with the liquid fuel charter, the revised fuel charter, is the alignment with the BE codes. As soon as that's done, it's very definite that sometime next day we'll be together like this. Thanks, sir, for that reminder. Okay, over to Sabia.
Thank you very much, Chair. Good evening, or afternoon, hello, everybody. I think I'm the chairperson of SPIA. It's a great pleasure to have the opportunity again to talk to you all today. I was in Durban, and when we talked about the refinery sector and supply security, I think I came 2 months ago to talk about the skills development, and we're glad to be able to come in numbers to talk about the transformation agenda, which I think is at the heart of the industry and the future of the industry. So with me, I think Yuan Fanny was the executive director of SAPIA. Rita is working for me, and I've got Buzwe was the head of Chevron, newly chairman of Chevron, newly appointed recently, Vincent Lazzarocca, and also will help me with going through our future in terms of a transformation and where we've been to. So without further ado, I think we're going to do a double act. We will talk, I'm sorry you don't have a slide, but you can see them there, and it's not been printed. We will talk about the committees that we formed and provide linkages from all the activity we are driving. We'll talk through the liquid fuel charter and the outcome of the audits that took place, I think, in 2011.
Unfortunately, this time I'm going to be a bit tight with time.
Okay.
Really running, but if you could just shoot right to the core of your presentation.
Okay. So we'll talk about the new code and we'll talk about the initiatives. So, as I said, Nabuzwe has taken on a role of a champion for SAPIA to lead the transformation committee and agenda. And just in time, I'll hand over to her to kind of take us through where we are.
The next slide, yeah? Okay.
Is this the other microphone?
Thanks again for the opportunity. I'm just going to go through the outcomes of the petroleum liquid fuel charter. We, in principle, as SAPIA, are aligned to the outcomes of the audit in all the elements: ownership, management, control, capacity building and planning, equity, procurement, access to facilities and hoteling and retailing. As you would appreciate, there's elements of the LFC that we do not necessarily collaborate on. So we'll largely comment here on the general and mainly on the capacity building highlighted in green, touch on procurement, and the other areas are really very specific to the companies. So if we look at capacity building, I mean, our interpretation really is just around those development. And as Gerard said at our last presentation to the portfolio meeting in September, we presented the framework that SAPIA is working on in terms of guiding us as we tackle the issue of skills development. I'll cover some of the initiatives that are covered there. And I think with regards to procurement, echoing what SAS just said, the alignment of the LFC or what the future of the LFC becomes, the alignment of that framework to the BBBE codes, the revised, is something that we believe must be sought. And again, I mean, for procurement, obviously we're looking at the balance between, he mentioned the risk, both real and perceived, and we're looking at that balance between the risk and the value that can be created, and also the opportunities that we can create as the industry in order to drive that. And we believe that for locally available goods, our industry should give opportunities to historically disadvantaged companies. And then again, on access to facilities and hosteling, there's a lot that companies do individually, but as staff here, we do engage at policy level amongst ourselves and try and engage, for example, with TNP, with the Transnet Port Authority, so we'll engage at that level. But there's obviously a lot of decisions that are happening at company level. If we go to the next slide and just try to be more specific on the BBBE amendment bill, we welcome the amendment bill and obviously welcome the monitoring and proper implementation of the enhancement thereof. And in general, we believe that we need to deal with fronting decisively, because that will go a long way in ensuring that we move at a faster pace in terms of transformation in the country. The introduction of penalties for fronting is something that we welcome, albeit cautiously, because we obviously need to guard against unintended consequences. Regulation of the verification industry is also something that we've noted and welcome, and also including the organs of state and the SOEs is something that we view positively. The BEU Commission that has some teeth is also a development that we think will go a long way in ensuring that there is movement in transformation in South Africa. We think that the scorecard makes sense, as most of you around here would know that, it's now down to 5 elements. And again, in terms of SAPIA, we would obviously collaborate as we've started. It propels us towards the journey that we have already started on the skills development, as we presented at the last PPE. And also opening up of the Minister of Higher Education spoke about opening up of the industry, as a training ground. Because, it's no use having all the programs at the universities and the technicals, and then there is no way for the learners to train. So those are some of the examples that are getting serious consideration at SAPIA. Just to reiterate our presentation on specifically on initiatives and programs on skills development, as discussed at the last PPE in September, we had the leadership in oil and energy, which was actually quite successful. We had about 348 employees that graduated from the program. Most of them were black, most of them were women. It was actually started as purely a women's program, but as it developed, there were men that joined the program. It has since evolved, and I'll talk about one other program that we're introducing. There's a women leadership program, which was launched about 3 months ago, and about 40 women are participating in that program. It is a leadership development program. It is specifically designed for SAPIA, so it covers elements of leadership, but with the peculiar, with emphasis on our industry. And about setting up the participants for the future. So the selection criteria was really around women that were in middle management and are being groomed to take on the senior roles in the future. A new program that will be launched in early 2013 is Advanced Certificate in Management for oil and gas, also aimed at middle managers, making a transition to senior management, but may not necessarily have specialist knowledge in the oil and gas industry. Because obviously this will allow us now to start attracting good candidates from other industries and giving them accelerated development specific to oil and gas. On a broader level, we've got a framework that is looking at an industry learning pathway right from matric, actually back to math and science at school, into matric, into university, college, all the various entrance points of tertiary education. So it's not just about degrees, it's not about diplomas, it's also about matriculants that can start working and be able to exit for studies either as an artisan or as a diplomat and be able to get back. And this program that say the framework covers right up to the level of PhD, because we believe that if we're not developing the teaching Jefferson mentioned, research and development, then it means our transformation agenda might be hindered in a way. So we support the full spectrum. And it's about working as well with the local land institutions in developing and in industry specific. So it's about defining what kind of skills we require as the industry, and providing the input upfront and not complain at the end when we get graduates that we feel are not adequate. We've got also looking at short courses for entrepreneurs and particularly female entrepreneurs. So it would be interesting to hear more from Wusa here as well. And one thing that we also want to push, because we're very active in SAPIA in working with the chemical industry CETA, we're looking at other opportunities to work with the CETA. An example is looking at how we can leverage the wholesale and retail CETA for our retailer and look at how we can create, again, a framework that would to support skills development in that arena. You know, to conclude, I think we believe that the Department of Energy should lead a process to develop a new sector transformation framework, recognizing the changes in the BBBE and obviously the codes and the BEE technical assistance guidelines. So kind of a coordinated and objective approach and aligned with our conflict between all these various elements. Development of a scorecard, you know, is key in terms of monitoring and measurement our compliance as the industry as we're moving forward, and also to make sure that we all know what we are meant to be doing and we are measuring ourselves, both the manufacturers, the wholesalers, and retailers, against a set of the criteria, and we're speaking the same language. And again, when we committed 10 years ago to the liquid fuel charter, and I think it's important for the industry, you know, to recommit to stay on the course and stay on the journey and be bought into that scorecard and hold ourselves accountable, whether it's 10 years from now or beyond. With that, I thank you.
10 years more and beyond.
And beyond.
Yes, again that. Usa.
I'm Bongani Mthombeni Mola, and I'll be representing WOSA. The company that I run is called Intense Engineering Solutions, and we are a member of WOSA, and I am the representative of WOSA in Western Cape. So I'm just going to tell you about what we do, what are the challenges that we face, particularly in the oil and gas sector, or oil and energy sector. And I come from a chemical engineering background myself, particularly in the petroleum sector. So I understand fundamentals of the liquid fuels industry. And so it helps to be able to tell you these challenges and experiences from a first-hand perspective. Okay, I'm just going to tell you what your WOSA is about, speak to you about the challenges. Just our proposal in curbing the challenges that we face, and I'll give you a little bit of personal experience in the liquid fuel sector. Okay. WOSA, Women in Oil and Energy South Africa, is a Section 21 company, and our aim is to facilitate and promote business opportunities for and enhance the participation of South African women in the oil and energy sector. We have a vision to be the leading organization in facilitating the participation of women in business ventures in the oil, gas, and other energy sectors. As you can see on the screen, WOSA is basically owned by or broken up in as shown as in the organogram. We've got also investment holdings. And the Section 21 company is 30% owned by this investment holdings company. And then of course also individual shareholders and members form the other remaining 70%. So the role that we want women to play is to be active in the energy sector as equals to their male counterparts. To have a growing share in the ownership of the economy, in the energy industry, in the petroleum industry. We'd like to see top management in oil sectors and in the energy sector, the top management being 30 to 40% women. And we would also like to grow the South African economy in a way that bigger number of ordinary households are able to have a sustainable income and therefore a sustainable way of life. So moving on to the challenges that we face, as we all know, cash is king and it all boils down to money, and that's what makes the world go around these days. We have financial challenges, and we found that it's quite difficult to maintain this organization with nearly 300 members, and having regional representation has been difficult. The budget for overheads and the running of the organization is modest, and we have found that oil companies have been unwilling to contribute to the overheads, and largely, according to our experience, they just want to fund the big projects. But you cannot, you know, have big projects or the implementation of big projects without the organizational structure to put them in place. So the WOSA investment holdings, the investment company, was established to address this. 20% of the dividends from Warsaw Investments will flow to Warsaw, the Section 21 company, to cover the overhead costs. But it will take 3 to 5 years before there's positive cash flow. So we're really battling at the moment. And it's imperative that everyone understands that Warsaw is not just another women's investment company. We're really trying to establish a network whereby female entrepreneurs and women in the oil and energy sectors can be empowered, can be brought up, can be encouraged, where there's systems in place to bring them up and to show them what the industry is all about. So also we'll need support to cover our overheads as well as support for the agreed projects for at least the next 3 years. We'd like to see more women participation. We would like to see value that is added to the projects in which we take part in. And we would like to obtain access to equity finance. It's very difficult in Warsaw in that you find a lot of the time that the members approach Warsaw as an organization to fund them or to provide equity finance. And because we ourselves are battling financially, it's very difficult to give them this equity finance. As for the infrastructural challenges that we're faced with, we need to establish and maintain a well-resourced platform and network for women in the sector. So we would like to have a network that is a go-to place for any woman in business that is in the oil and energy sector that will be able to see who can I work with, who can I partner with in the industry, who is there, what funding models are in place. We would like to work with academic and training institutions which respond to the need of women as it is related to society. We need to implement skills development and training. And trust me, I understand getting people together and all of us saying this is what needs to be done, but this is what needs to be done. I'm very passionate about seeing things done. It's not just about let's get together and have a meeting about a meeting, but let's put things in place that can actually bring about change and transformation. We need well-supported and resourced women associations. I was very interested in what the peer just said about the leadership, women in leadership program. I think that's fantastic. I think that is absolutely fantastic. I think if we had something like 20
that... 20 seconds now, ma'am.
Pardon?
20 seconds.
20 seconds. Okay, let me just... Okay, we'll speak about how fantastic it is later. Okay. We need a clear national plan of action of how to ensure women's empowerment. Clear national targets for women empowerment. We need a body with the necessary resources and authority chosen by women to monitor the progress, and an advisory body which can package the interventions if the targets are not met. It would be great to get financial support from industry, Total, BP, Sasol, PetroSA, Shell, from government, the DLI, the DME, ESCOM, and from the financial sectors as well, banks and investment companies. What has been, can I continue for another minute or so? We have a number of successes. We've got a few of our members that are now running their own petrol stations. Some women have been able to participate in equity stakes in oil companies, so it's great. We've invested in projects that will pay our dividends someday. So there has been activity, just that we just need that extra bit of responsibility and a commitment from industry stakeholders and the DOE in getting our organization just backed up and supported. I don't think there's time for me to go into this.
Unfortunately.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I like the slide where you showed that you'd like to get financing from the various stakeholders. I wish you'd have had more time to tell us what attempts you've done, because those are some of the players which are one assumed honorable members also would have engaged with them quite a lot. Sipao?
Thanks, Chair. Sipao is the majority union in the industry. And as we said in the beginning, introducing the union in its full name. Chair, we would like to thank Parliamentary Portfolio on the Energy for the opportunity to present our perspective on transformation in the liquid petroleum industry. And our input is based on our review of them, Lord, the solution audit, as well as our experience and observation in the industry. We have noted with dismay that, Lord, the solutions work was marked in certain respect because certain companies did not provide information requested of them. This behavior by the companies raises questions and will continue to impede progress in both the implementation, monitoring, and evaluation of transformation. Agreeing with SASTA that some of the key players in the industry see the word transformation as voluntary, think time has come that some and key industry players take transformation in our country very seriously. And in so doing, we also note in the methodology that the union head office had not submitted comments on the study and are thus pleased to give input at the stage. We may supplement them at a later stage if the portfolio committee will allow us to do so. Our comments at this stage are preliminary, Chair. Contextualizing our submission, Chair, we are saying while we have made important advances in areas of democracy, human rights, and social benefits, we still need to transform workers' lives at the socio-economic level. We still face the triple crisis of unemployment, poverty, inequality, and inequality. The census released yesterday, Chair, now shows unemployment to be higher than officially expected at 29.8%. This poses a serious challenge to the industry. We have clearly not come close to achieve the demands set out in the Freedom Charter. And in the Freedom Charter, quote, the people shall share in the country's wealth. The national wealth of our country, the heritage of South Africans, shall be restored to the people. The mineral wealth beneath the soil, the banks and monopoly industry shall be transformed to the ownership of the people as a whole. All other industry and trade shall be controlled to assist the well-being of the people.
Mren, unfortunately, man, I'm sure quite a number of people would understand here, but in Parliament, if you're given 10 minutes, the speaker doesn't give you anything, not even 10 minutes, 1 second. Sometimes they are flexible. I'm sorry I'll be like that today, because I'm watching the pace at which we are doing here. We'll be forced to skip some of the substantial issues we want to present. If you really, you've got a good presentation, which we all can read, can you please, we shine a corner, question God.
Thanks, through your indulgence, what one will do is to give over to Tanya to speak to specific key areas of focus.
What the Deputy General Secretary did was to just lay a foundation saying in a setting where we were in transformation in the Charter, we just need to locate it within the broader context. And in doing so now, we look to very specific issues on which workers have concern. In terms of capacity building, we note that there's been a decline in spending on capacity building. What we're also worried about is that capacity building hasn't been disaggregated. So when we look at the spend, we're not sure whether the spend has been on executive management, for example, or on workers. We know, for example, that there's been more work needs to be spent on training on core skills, priority skills, and scarce skills. But what we're also worried about, and what members report, is that even if you get those skills also need to be accompanied with more mentorship, with the so-called tacit skills. And I'll give an example. If, for example, in our jobs, or if in Parliament, for example, we write a policy document,
it needs to be worded in a specific way to make it more palatable. As an example, so too in batteries. You might have the hard skills, but they need to be applied in a certain way. And mentorships are not being rolled through. So that needs to be done. The more disaggregation of figures needs to be done, and what we really want is we need training of workers to make sure that there's career pathing. On procurement, procurement seems to be integrated in the business more and more, and we're pleased about that, that blacks are not being confined to the sidelines. But what we want to be sure is that we're not having black-owned enterprises that's not being linked to job creation in South Africa. And what we want to check is that the goods and services being procured are manufactured in South Africa. Because that will make sure that we advance in job creation throughout South Africa and advancing the national interest. What we also want to check is there monitoring of workers' conditions in the supply chain throughout? Regarding employment equity, it's clear that companies are still run largely by whites in key positions. And we're concerned about that. We want to make sure that employment equity is running throughout the organization and that advances are being made from the top all the way through the bottom. That there is proper career pathing. There's proper training. There's a sense from workers that while white people automatically are seen to be worthy, black people have to prove their worth. In some companies, opportunities are afforded to those from outside the borders quite easily, and opportunities are not afforded as easily to those within South Africa's borders. We don't want that to be taken as a xenophobic attack, because we recognize in some cases that there are scarce skills. But what we want to check is that are those companies checking clearly and carefully that the skills do exist in South Africa and do exist within black people in South Africa first. And we want to be sure that that is taking place. And lastly, we want to check that the light isn't just being shone on executive level when we're looking at employment equity, that it is being shone at all levels in the organization. And that certainly for our members, that there is sufficient training and opportunity being given to our members to rise through the ranks as well. Because employment equity isn't just about executive level, that it's around middle management and it's around lower level management. And then things that are being looked at as well, that it's meaningful, that there's proper participation, that there's proper decision making, and some of the things that are being looked at. What we're really concerned about, and that what you do look at, and we're really pleased that you're looking at, Chair and Honourable Members, is the lack of access to joint facilities. And I'm sorry to bring it up, but I do have to bring it up. What we would like you to do is to link it to the issues being raised in the Competition Commission and the allegations around collusive behaviour. Because what we're very worried about, and it links to the refinery capacity, is that there is a lack of refinery capacity now, and it has been insufficient investment in the industry. And we want to make sure that we've got sufficient investment going into the future, but that the capacity and that the infrastructure that's there is used optimally by all the players for the benefit of all. What we want to make sure is that there's appropriate and sufficient self-sufficiency by all South Africans going into the future. That we have proper investments and that we handle the cost implications going into the future. That we handle the budget implications and that we don't have a huge balance of trade issue later on when all of a sudden we have to have a massive investment later. And that when we have to invest in order to expand refineries going on later, that we handle the procurement issues appropriately and are able to maximize on the employment implication going forward. That proper procurement takes place, that more businesses that are going to feed into the refineries and any of the inputs that are needed are able to gear up in time. These require a long-term plan, and we want to make sure that we get it into place with the appropriate financing and with the appropriate incentives. In terms of enterprise development,
It seems like, you know, the medium-level action is taking place according to the consultant's assessment. You know, there's some terms of credit. I was really interested to hear the assessment taking place by SASTA. You know, there's some action taking place in terms of assessment, and to use a term maybe some of the capitalists will be familiar with, talk is cheap, but at the end of the day, money buys whiskey. So we need to ramp up the action that is being taken in order to expand local enterprises and employment opportunities. I'll hand over to the Deputy General Secretary to conclude.
Transformation. Both in terms of goals set out in the charter and in terms of the potential contribution to the broader socio-economic needs of the country as a whole. Specifically, changes over 10 years have not sufficiently advanced the interest of workers and the working class in relation to skills and training, mentoring, career pathing and promotion at all levels, and direct and indirect employment creation. In fact, the IDC sector report shows a decline in employment. In addition, SIPAU has severe concern regarding the viability of the industry going forward. In particular, we need to invest and extend refinery capacity. And with the conduct of companies to ensure access to facility and appropriate pricing, we therefore recommend that more emphasis be placed on skills and training, more emphasis be placed on job creation, both direct and indirect. The Parliamentary Portfolio Committee investigate how to promote investment in refining capacity and how to maximize job creation while doing so. The committee further investigate the allegations regarding lack of access to infrastructure and linking this to the work being done by the competition authorities. We are willing to promote more, to provide more information, Chair, on request, and that you for further opportunity to make for our input. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Members. So we've been listening very, very much attentively. Let me open now for questions. I'm sure. I appreciate that. I'll give the Honourable Members an opportunity to ask questions, to some clarity seeking, and also to open up to everyone thereafter. I just want to highlight to those who are here for the first time, energy stakeholder meetings are open to everyone making an input. So in times, even those who have not had a chance to make a formal presentation, because all those who make presentations are just triggering, you know, provoking our minds to think and make inputs. The only thing that's going to contain that is time. As a result, I unfortunately will be a little bit different from the other energy stakeholder meetings and give people 1 minute to make inputs. Rather, let's have another round so that we open up, you know, and give everyone an opportunity. Honourable Members. Bunga.
Thank you, sir. The challenge with this is that the documents are too many. I don't know if we start with SASTA.
I just realized that I didn't introduce our honorable members. That's honorable Khadeb.
Yes, sir.
The young iron of the Federal Committee for
Energy. My name is Susu Khadeb, the member of the Portfolio Committee of NH.
Correction, Honourable Khadeb, the young lion of the Portfolio Committee.
Yeah, okay. Che, you're exposing me. Well, the young lion within this Portfolio Committee, che, you're going to make these people to be threatened. You know, young lions is easy. But This presentation is very nice because it's hard to explain, probably, starting with us, explain very well probably most of your intentions and your findings and conclusion. But my problem is that you're speaking in terms of that you need to facilitate skills training in the industry.
But I don't hear you, you know, probably elaborating more about you collaborating with higher education institutions as a base of engagement. But also, the issue of your challenge time, to say how far do you expect, you know, to, because when you speak about this transformation, in the last engagement, I said, you know, we're always engaging freely that you must do transformation, you know, it's like a song. But this time it's unfortunate, you know, all the songs, the singers died, you know. And sometimes the records sometimes go with scratches and stuff. This one must have an implementation. That's why I'm getting worried if I don't see any turnaround time. So yeah, when do you expect to respond towards this matter? But also your response to say, in terms of your initiative projects, that at least we had about 20% women shareholders. What is 20%? I tend to learn when the auditor report, auditor general gives us some reports, to say this perception to say when you give 20%, the actual number is not 20%. It's much lower than that. So that's why it's very important that you must deal with specification of numbers so that at least you balance the scale. Because when you talk about percentages, you don't speak of actual numbers, but instead we speak in terms of your preempts of associates.
Chairperson has just said we have a rush method.
Probably the other thing that I wanted to get a clarity is related to that, you know, SASA used to, you know, collaborate with the private sector, the oil companies, for its funding. Now you just said you know, you are solemnly supported by DOE. My question is to say, what happens to these oil industry? Why did that disappear? While we saying we want to build one country where everybody must, you know, come on board. Because you know, one of the other things that, you know, the SEPA was just saying that you must share in the country's wealth. And that's the mean there are those who want to benefit more than the others. What happened to that collaboration? I really need to understand, because if ever there is a challenge that these other oil companies don't want to collaborate with you, SASA, what are the challenges? What are the closing loopholes that you can be able to unlock as Parliament? Because one of the other role that you must be able to play a part whereby we ensure that, you know, we level the playing field, so that we try and engage them in different spheres. I don't know whether should we engage with one particular document then pass whatever.
Yeah. Just take them off.
Alright. Yes, sir. The well, similar with SAPIA. SAPIA, last time, you know, I engaged with you coming to engage the Portal Committee to say you must tell us which institution are you collaborating with. You are still not telling us. That means you are always coming to seeing here, not implementing. But I always say, if ever you are speaking in terms of skills development, the only way that you can enhance skills development, collaborate with institutions, but not just collaborate with institutions. Make sure that at least there is an accountability of that skills development. Because at the end of the day, you will find that all the time you will cry that you've got to change your skills, you have to import skills. But you don't plan yourself ahead in ensuring that you respond to the shortages of skills. The issue of the issue of the woman leadership, you know, in your slide there, so that your slides are not numbered. That speaks in terms of the woman leadership program. My sister, you know, when I saw the your sentence there,
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I think there's been something living, and that is that I've been involved in two of those and running a course on the introduction to the entire industry for the last few years. We've had about 80% black interest and about 40% of the women, nearly all the little managers of various industries, bank industry, the petroleum industry, and everything else. One of the things that we quite clearly identified in that is the fact that the oil majors are still investing at quite large rates around the world from the retail industry. What I haven't heard about any of these evening is other than a brief comment from the Honourable colleagues that earlier on, the opportunities that are being created in
Thank you.
Back in action. Back in action. Thank you very much. Anyone? Nessa, you're not off the hook. We are here. We know you're here. There's nothing in energy sector that always be concluded without the regulatory issue being addressed. Baba President, I know you may not know everything, but I'm sure from the OE side you may throw one or two things. Now that the microphones are back, even the soft-spoken can be bold enough to make inputs. Shall I ask Dr. Twala to say a few things? I thought it would be like that because it's honestly the first time we have a law firm, you know, coming in to in an energy environment. You know, we really, I feel very much honored and excited, you know, excited because I. When I heard rest of Capitola, I said, oh, by the way, do we have a law firm looking at energy only? Of course, they do other things. You know, you may respond, you may make an input now, but even later. And I would like to very much creatively and humbly volunteer Standard Bank as well, because it would be interesting just to sense from them that as the banking sector, you know, what makes us stick in investing or, you know, or what do we see as declining investments, you know, in this area in the context of transformity. There's a lot, that's my appeal, just for people to make inputs. Yes, Capitola?
Chairperson, thank you very much for the opportunity. I am going to make comprehensive submissions in writing to the portfolio committee. I think that this forum is probably, at this point, given the time constraints, not appropriate. The topic is a substantive topic. I've been involved in the industry for some number of years and have seen management come and go. I've been a part of submissions as a lawyer on behalf of oil companies when this charter was first mooted, including the petroleum, the various amendment acts. So it is an industry, particularly the downstream marketing, sales and marketing, midstream side, refining side of the business that I'm familiar with. So my observation is that transformation has been marginal. Despite the fact that we have the Molotov report suggesting that there's been in certain areas and with certain organizations, certain companies, there's been some success. The fact of the matter is most of the equity deals, the talk at ownership, most of the important ones are, as they say, under the water. The black empowerment companies have not benefited from it substantially. They may very well be owners. I believe in many instances they are notional owners. One, because they have no voice, mostly because they've not been able to pay for this, or the performance of the company has been such. And there are a number of reasons why that is so. So that's the first observation. And the second observation, and I think far more important, Chairperson, is the fact that it's my view that the oil companies lack the commitment. There's just absolutely no commitment. And I would challenge most of the oil companies, not because it's my job to do so, on the contrary, I work for them, but because I work for them, I know this. If you were to ask most managers, whether they're divisional managers or middle managers, tell me what your company's transformation strategy is. I think that you would be surprised that many of them don't know. Now, our transformation is not going to take place if it is not owned at that level, Chairperson. So, I think those are my key observations around this report. I think that the audit report, and particularly the portfolio committee, deserves a more comprehensive submission. And we certainly will be making those submissions to the committee itself. But those are passing observations. Thank you, Chips.
Bamsa.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Mashuru Romano, and I think I would like to align my sentiments or comments with the sentiments that New York Capti has shared, Sepau, as well as Sasta. I've been involved in the industry now for probably 10, 12 years or so, and I think there is a difference in terms of interpretation and perception of what the transformation is all about. In my assessment to the industry, transformation is a gift. Black people are being given something they don't deserve. Until there is an understanding and a link between the license to operate and the need to transform the industry, I think that problem will exist for a while. I think I did make a request through the Secretary Chair that perhaps we who have been in the industry should also be given a chance to present to this House what our experience has been. I know the bulk of the Moloto report or audit was based on inputs that we gave, but I think it would be important that we share some of the experiences that we have had in the industry. We want to participate in the industry. We can add value. We think we do add value in the industry. But I think there is a gulf between where we are and where the legislature is in terms of transformation and where the industry is. I think we need to have a frank and an open discussion if we are going to be able to address the issues.
Just on that, you know, I think I'd like us to be a bit more engaging. Do you feel that has not been done up to now? And we've got a liquid fuel charter, which I'm sure it was not easy to mount, the current one, which is under revision. Surely, there must have been a lot of sparks flying, you know, and until people came to consensus. Now, do you feel that frankness, which obviously influenced people to rethink, you know, and to monitor things, to resist, but also along the path, along the journey, you know, to actually be re-influenced as well.
Well,
that frankness, that openness has not been there, or is impartial, or whatever. If you could just comment on that.
Chair, I asked myself the question when Sapia started making the presentation. And they said they are only going to focus on capacity building. Now, I ask myself the question, why is it that an industry that has committed itself to transformation without coercion from anybody 12 or more years ago, today does not have a position on procurement, on all those other fundamental issues? They have a position as an industry on capacity building. I mean, I don't understand. If there is commitment, and if there is a position that the industry has on all of those issues, why can't they share this with this house? Yeah. So. I mean, I'm not saying there may be areas where there is indeed genuine, commitment. I think Sapawu asked some very pertinent questions. Yeah. About black people must prove themselves. Yeah. And for how long are black people going to prove themselves? So these are issues, and I think we need to have the industry come to the table and say, these are our problems, these are our difficulties, let's sit around and we talk about them frankly. We're not saying we don't want the industry in South Africa. We want the industry in South Africa. We want technology transfer. We want all of those things. There are very pertinent issues we need to ask. South Africa talks about a new growth path. It talks about beneficiation. It talks about localization in terms of procurement and so forth. How does the industry come to the party and say, we are committed to beneficiation? We will no longer bring engineers from Ireland to come and do work so that we can be able to get engineers from South Africa. We will not bring engineers from France to come and repair, nuclear reactor that has been, and I think the problem is also on our side. In 50 years, we have not been able to insist in capacity in those areas. So in some instances, there's two ways. There's the policy environment that is probably not quite emphatic, but there is also, and I can understand that when you are in business, you want to maximize return for your home base. If your headquarters is in Tokyo, you want to make sure that headquarters get the see that you are working towards headquarters benefiting. But I mean, all I'm saying is that we think we should sit around the table with industry and talk frankly and say, where do we go together from here? But right now, I see an industry that is not willing to put itself on the line and put issues. Capacity building, yes, is one of them, but there's many other issues, and I cannot accept that the industry doesn't have a position on procurement or doesn't have a position on ownership. I cannot accept that.
Okay, well said. But still you haven't answered me, because what I wanted to has there been frank engagement along the way? One of the good examples is the charter on the finance charter. It has not yet been concluded. I'm sure people have been engaging very frankly on that. I can't say that I'd like anyone to comment around the issue that there's a very peculiar dimension here. Mr. Ramona has raised is that you have oil companies. I don't want to put the spotlight on them, but it's a very interesting thing. You may comment, or anyone else. They are located in South Africa, but they are transnationals. You know, how is that dimension handled? Because we have our own particular development or transformation path in South Africa, which from time to time and really may either resonate in certain instances and may not resonate in other instances with what London is requiring, with what New York requires, whereas we expect them to disrespect what we want to do here in South Africa. I'm just provoking that. And I really would like Paul and Sandra to really talk about what I'm saying. To what extent have you been frank about this? I'll tell you one of the experiences we had. The previous energy stakeholder meeting, or even honorable members, if you remember, one of the things I triggered with them is that it was the renewable energy. That was the Renewable Energy Council. They were not happy about the extent to which banks, were where we're putting, you know, where we're investing or closing the financial the financing. You know, they were claiming that the bank people are shifting the goalposts. Anyway, someone, from the banking sector, he put this story. But see, what I mean, a very simple thing. What I could grapple with, and even accept to an extent, though I was quite diplomatic, that what have they been doing before we invited people here? Have they not been engaging? We have a culture in South Africa which was intrigued by Madiba, you know, that, you know, in order to transform this country, where you come from, whether you agree in any case, it's even more so when you come from different angles and quarters and shades, you know, with different stakeholders. You convert in one place. You take up matters with one intention of coming up to a solution, you know, a compromise, obviously. But at least there must be some genuine engagement along this path. And I'm saying, I'm provoking anyone, you know, just to say, look, this is what we feel have done. I understand when Mr. Doma says, and Simon Samine, you know, that a single company going to knock at doors, in order to grow the company and drive business. But then, there is another level of engagement, which I assume, correct me, that various stakeholders converge, not through the Portfolio Committee for Energy, but on their own. That's what I'm throwing at you. I'm trying those engagements. If yes, what do they produce? Or do they frustrate you because very little or nothing comes out of them? What kind of platform do you engage in? When we do get invitations for oil and gas seminar, symposium and things, then one, you know, is eager to attend those, to listen as to, of course, at times some tend to be technical. Some, one assumes that they have one aim, to ensure that there's advancement in this industry. I'm saying this, that ever since I chaired this committee, you know, every time honorable members will come and engage in areas of, you know, hydrocarbons or liquid fuels, you know, I seem to be picking up some broken gramophone, you know. And I'm really provoking that let's break that mode, let's break that monotony, you know. Particularly now that if I'm correct, Mr. Bezadino, that the revised liquid fuel charter is imminent. Once the alignments are done, the department is done with it, it takes it to the cabinet. Once it's brought here, the department may even engage with you people, you know, create its own platform, and we'll increase that. Or it may look at that we be part of that platform effort to ensure that we all make contributions to the revised charter. Sorry, I've taken so long to speak, but it's just that every time we converge and talk about this area, I'm just very concerned. Why is it that we seem to be having some broken record syndrome? What are the causes of that? How do we break it? Is it attitude? Is it systemic issues? Is it business models that we are on place? You know, when I say systemic, we go into policies, legislation. Some have alluded to that, but I'd like to hear more voices because each and every one of us has got different experiences. That's why I'm looking at NERSA with a smile. Because as a regulator, they also have their experience. But can I also once again appeal that let me volunteer Standard Bank, not of regard for the others, but they have their interests. See, one of the issues I'm appealing to gentlemen for Standard Bank, that, you know, they are a very good sounding board. Because if they start showing, if they start investing or giving signals of being keen to invest, it seems it will, to quite an extent, be a signal that something good is happening. And once the appetite declines, you know, that on its own as well is a signal that something may be amiss, whether real or perceived. I've spoken too much. I think at this stage in time, I would be keen to invite the presenters to make their input. The only thing I don't remember, I want, I didn't want them to directly respond. Now that there's been a few other inputs, now they should be free to make inputs as well. Because I would like us to have an us and them environment here, because it is to create a platform. I know that we've only started this exercise 12 months ago. At the end of the day, all the issues that we raise there will obviously mold them into reports, submit them into the system in Parliament. And Parliament, all it does is to take this, feed them back into the executive, you know. But things that we've been asked to handle, like the proposal from CEPAO, we'll definitely consider them formally as a committee. I'm quiet now. I thought your hands would shoot another the microphone back. Okay, but look.
Thank you.
Tanya.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think when you ask the question, what is transformation in the sector, it goes to the heart or the core of how the sector is structured. I think we've got a challenge. Our structure is a structural problem in that on one side, you've got, shall I say, 7 oil companies who are supposedly have to compete with each other, which are not really competing because they are a price taker in terms of the price at the pump, because the market is regulated. I like what the professor said there, that he feels that the market must be deregulated. But I put to you, professor, that the reason why these oil companies are divesting from around the world is because the market around the world is deregulated. And the only place where they're making money is here in South Africa, in the market that is regulated. So I have to differ with you there. And the other reason, the developing nation, we need to create jobs for our people. The job creation part is a global phenomenon. I mean, you must understand that in the 1800s, the population of the world was less than 1 billion. And during that time, there was no industrial revolution, if I may put it that way. So everybody was working. If you're working on the fields or doing wood, whatever you were doing, you were working, physically working. Now, if you look at this time, we've got 7 billion people, you've got industrialization, now you've got technology and all of these things. What are you going to do with 7 billion people? Where are you going to find work for them? So for me, we've got greater challenges than people then. So for me, the core about transformation in industry has to do with competition. The industry will use competition in its system, but no, we can't do this because of competition issues. I just don't understand this competition issue here. When industry wants to do things that benefits them, they will do them. And there will be no questions competition. For me, it looks like indeed, they're playing the policy that we know that change is inevitable, but we manage this change to make sure that the bottom line remains unchanged. In the sense that even with transformation, they choose what they want to do, like capacity building, and they do nothing about the other issues. I think Ramana just put it very clearly that what is industry stance in terms of enterprise development? What is their stance in terms of procurement? What is their stance in terms of skill development and all these other things? And on top of it, in this country, we can pay you for doing skills development. And they don't do it. So clearly, it shows to me that the heart of these people is elsewhere, somewhere, I don't know where. But I think people should understand that transformation is here and is here to stay. I think we have allowed you far too long to dictate to us how you do business in our country. We're also very mindful of the fact that, companies look at returns and risk and so on. We understand that. But you are making lots of money here than anywhere else in the world under these regulated, shall I say, as the professor said, heavily regulated market. But this is where you're making your money. And we're saying the cost of doing business in country is an imperative of transformation. And we say you must transform. How you transform, we've even given you the time to send the energy white paper. We said you must transform, or you must show us plans of how you're going to effect this transformation. And I think that industry has been taking us for a ride for 10 years, and I think it's time for biting now, because really, this cannot continue. It cannot be business as usual. Thank you.
Are you sharp? You're talking about biting. That's what I'm asking. Okay, it's the same.
I've got something to refer to, Honourable Chair. I mean, I think in terms of
I'm getting overstimulated by the debate now. But I mean, Prabhupada would certainly oppose any deregulation in the industry. We're happy with the amount of regulation in the industry, and where the industry has been deregulated to a limited extent, we find the collusion in the industry as it is. But I think there's certainly ways in which we can transform the industry to make sure that everybody benefits, and we must make sure that the industry transforms within the sector as it is. Given the high amount of multinationals in the industry now, there's no multinational now that would say that they won't comply to national laws within each country. That's within every multinational's policy. And I think certainly what we can do is we can say, for example, within the Department of Energy, we can find existing laws where we can sharpen the scalpel. I don't know who wants to butt. I don't want to butt. I don't know that you've got really sharp scalpels to say, is it within the Petroleum Act or, you know, within your toolbox, that we can force compliance much more strongly. Now, I don't have any answer specifically now. I need to certainly look within your toolbox, but Sabahu is certainly very happy to say, what is it that we can do to try and force compliance in a way that we certainly don't want to cripple these companies. You know, we want them to be viable and invest into the future and be sustainable. That we take for granted. But what we want to make sure is that the industry is sustainable for everybody, for new entrants, for existing players, for workers, and for the working class into the future. And that transformation has to be a given for now and into the future. And we're happy to make proposals into that regard.
No other input? Yeah, really disappoint me, people. I'll invite you when we have another session on renewable energy. It really becomes a very vibrant, you know, engagement. You know, people make input. You guys, maybe it's my political background, but I'm sure all members would attest to that. It's out of this kind of frank engagement that will become better, because what I sense coming out here is that, you know, although he has nothing clearly that you have not been engaging in at a collective level. You know, one company or a few PE companies may be approaching honorable members, SAPIA, you know, or SAPIA members. But in terms of, you know, that engagement which one expects, it's not there. I'm really provoking you. I think we should come to a close now. But I'd like just to those who like playing with these small machines or computers to go to the YouTube and listen to Professor Michael Greenberger. Some may know him. He's one of these gurus in the oil industry in Washington. Don't ask me how I landed with him. The things that he says about what happens in the oil, in the crude oil industry internationally. I'm provoking this so that you can see. You listen when I give my concluding remarks, why I would like, I wasn't right. In fact, I always want these days when we have a session like this, we start with him, even through some video conferencing. It's a pity our video conference facilities are in smaller rooms here. I wish they would be in big rooms. So, I don't know how many times have I played his one video where he exposes some of the vagaries that take place in this sector, you know. And I'm asking myself the extent to which the transnationals are influenced by that behavior at global level, and the extent to which that then gets transmitted into the South African situation, but also the extent to which we will respond to it. I think one of the inputs was saying that how do we handle some of the anomalies that take place in this industry. I think it is. I mean, if you look at the erratic, you know, oil price, it's one of the most inexplicable things I've seen in my political life. You know, I won't go much. I'm sure you people know better than me. But if I can just throw in, even honourable members, I still stand by my question. What constitutes transformation in the liquid fuels industry? And I think one other thing we need to be clear is that who are these key stakeholders here, local and globally? Is this just one area which I feel that if you are to handle it, you can't handle it here by looking locally or making local considerations, because it's so inextricably interwoven with global markets. We don't produce crude oil, for example. As a result, whatever we do, we've got to respond to the global village. I mean, you've seen right now how the Department of Energy has been frantically running all over the world looking for alternatives ever since the sanctions on Iran started biting, even in preparation for them. It was not the companies, now it's the department itself, on behalf of government, had to do that. There's something also I'd like really to challenge people to. There seems to be a strong drive to say, let's have transformation for real. Let's reverse manage change. Of course, I'm protecting Sabir here. Sabir, don't respond. But surely one day I would like you to come back and say, look, we've considered that allegation, and we concede here and there, but here we feel that we've done some good job, because it's really in a position or an allegation that really needs a good response, an appropriate response at some stage, that we are managing change. Managing change can be done, but if it's done collectively, that's fine, but if it's done partially by one sector in the industry, then it's not okay. One of the areas I feel strongly that should be looked into, a couple of areas that should be looked into, if we are to talk about transforming this industry. We're talking about cleaner fuels, it links with refineries, refining capacity and things. And vertically, cleaner fuels. We are at cleaner fuels 5, isn't it? And we need to be serious about that. I'm sure when we say cutting edge technology, behind that it means we need to see Professor Lloyd and his peers doing a lot more on research and development. We've done it in South Africa and other areas. Why not here? Legislative and regulatory certainty, NERSA, DOE, and us. Surely that's a challenge. In fact, we know that there's a regulatory refinement that's forthcoming, you know, particularly on strategic software. But our role on regional, continental, and global, at a global dimension is very important. As we are saying, that look, these are transnationals. The extent to which they act independently in South Africa, or they have to abide to what the headquarters in London, Tokyo, Frankfurt, say, is something that has to be taken seriously. Of course, this goes wider, which is why I was saying that probably, or most definitely, we need to be clear as to who are the key stakeholders in this drive for transforming this industry. You may sit as a black economic empowerment company on your own, hitting against the wall, but at the end of the day, I think to me it's appropriate you understand the environment. It needs protest. It needs protest. And even make efforts to influence it. Because I think we're not just passive participants, or active participants, or agents of change for better industry. In fact, I'm very much encouraged when there's an emphasis in from CIPAO, the unions, that whatever rights, whatever type you want, at the end of the day, don't want an industry that's nosediving. We want an industry that's thriving, but there are certain things that we are very firm that they should be fixed and how they should be fixed. But also, one of the things I've learned very interestingly, one of the members in particular, is promoting associated industries. I'll say associated. Because when I went to Durban, it dawned to me again, in fact it was the first time, that crude oil has got more than 200 producers. I'm correct, eh? Then what do you do about them? Because everything around crude oil revolves around crude oil as a source of energy. But once we start processing crude oil, out comes other things. And the extent to which now we ensure the downstream beneficiation in the chemical industry as a whole now, I think it's something. Of course, there is a risk of diverting from focus there, but it's important as well. What if now, by emphasizing on those associated industries, it actually indirectly enhances and makes this industry better? You know better. But it links standard bank with the appropriate investment one was talking about, you know, that we really, from our side as Parliament, we really would like to hear more and more, you know, a good signal from the finance sector in general, as the extent to which they are keen to invest in that area. If this country is going to invest 850 billion in the few years on infrastructure, that one is so that infrastructure bill will need energy, let alone beyond that, when it's done, they will still need for energy. That's throwing that on the table. But to me, beyond the liquid fuel-based transformation, there are a few things I still particularly would like to see taking place or being considered very seriously. I'm outright biased now, Honorable Smiley. I'm not saying this is how we should do it, but to me, these should be taken on board. How it's for you to work out. You know, human capital development can be looked in different ways, but the power said it very clearly. It is going beyond managerial sector. It must be the human capital development. That's why I'm running away from skills development, because it's the whole human capital in this sector. I'm sure even the finance sector, Mnumzana, then when it looks at the seriousness of how this industry is trying to ensure there's an adequate and appropriate human capital to drive it, then you're talking now. We can start looking at our deepening our pockets now to invest, because we know that you have ensured that there's appropriate human resource, skilled human resource to drive it. There could be other few areas. Your regulator, legislating refinement, which is necessary, and one or two other things, but this one is also with me. Localization has been raised. That's very fundamental, I'm sure. That's why we've had the majority of these five energy stakeholders meetings being renewable energy. The first one we had in this very room was, as we are introducing renewable energy to South Africa, what job prospects do we have in local manufacturing? I'm sure as you monitor that field, that area, you see how the battle is raging, you know, IPA2, you know, in particular the green industries, how are they creating an inclusive environment to ensure that there are jobs and real jobs there. Because putting in a wind turbine, there's a lot of jobs during construction. Once it's done, maintenance drops right to minuscule. So it was seen that where job creation is in manufacturing. So localization becomes very, very important, which is what when I was thinking on my own that the ease of the 200 products out of crude oil becomes very paramount, because then that's where the downstream beneficiation becomes important. There are a few other things which I feel that although they may be seen as softer, but they are important soft, that things like attitudinal changes and resocialization of people. You know, it may be an old industry, you know, people tend to be cycled in it, but someone just said something which you may undermine, but you may find that it is a randomness that's eating the industry or creating, how can I say, stagnation of some sort. When middle management doesn't know what transformation is all about, you know how is it for people to resist change when they are not informed? I've said something about the business models, both operational and financial. To what extent have these transnationals readapted their business models to the South African situation? To what extent are the head offices buying into that? Have you looked into that? Have you engaged? That's why I'm concerned. I was saying, how frank have you been? Because my assumption, Honorable Smart, is that if these stakeholders you are symbolically representing those who are not here. If you have been engaging, surely you should have been sharing with us that these are the things we have discussed, but as we have been engaging, you know, one way or another, that these people will tell that, look, no matter how much you can buy into your local South African scenario, but the unfortunate thing is that at a global level, our bosses say it's 1, 2, 3. Then we say, then South Africans, how do we address that? How do we address the lack of synchrony, or absence of synchrony between, or lack of resonance between the local and global models? Because we talk of massive institutions, you know, that's national. We may even take like a tanker in the sea to turn around to buy into things. That things is our own contribution to the international area. I think that's where one can end. But I think once again, along the way where you will interact and engage, one important is that ask yourself, we've got a whole host of tools that have been developed, that has been molded in the development arena. Your national group path, your EPUB 2, your localization strategy, which other ones? Oh, there's a list of them from the Skills Summit, you know. All the tools to me, at some stage, I would like, this whole team here, even those are not, to come back and say, to what extent have we tested our industry against them? All against them to say, in this whole Green Industries program driven by IDC, whatever, this is how far we've gone. If up to, I know there are certain areas, this is how far we've gone. You know, or even if there's absence there, I think that's very, very, very important. Honorable Smiley and everybody here, I trust and hope, even if you disappointed us from not being very, very debating, but particularly those who flew all the way from Durban and Cape Town and Johannesburg, you may find this beneficial in the sense that it's preparing ourselves for even future engagements. But I must be rather more and more frank now that really there will come a time when we will start shortening our patience. And as Parliament, I'm sure I'm speaking with confidence on behalf of all political parties for that matter, that will put pressure on you to bring about real transformation. A lot now has been to say, now, Sapi, it's fine. And it's not first time. But, of course, the Department of Energy is in the firing line as well. We understand. We've been chasing them particularly to ensure that they bring in regulatory refinement. We also know that there are a couple of laws that are coming, bills that are coming for legislative refinement as well, not just regulatory. Which one? Petroleum. There's a petroleum bill that's, petroleum products are supposed to come, you know. And the gas one, very, very urgent, we understand, you know. And I'm sure Wang is raising those things, not just to say we'll do our best to make sure that they are processed, they are brought within the record, but also let us view them in the context of how will they take us to our vision of a transformed industry. Because a transformed liquid fuels industry means a step or plus one in transformation of our economy, in transformation of our country. No matter how much we dream of renewable energy, clean energy, at the end of the day, at this stage in time, we cannot run away from the reality that this is the energy career or careers that we're going to use for some time to come in the future. But the main thing is then, let's make the best of it. Let's create jobs out of it, you know. Let's create more confidence out of it. Let's invest, let's invite more investment, both local and international out of it, because it has ripple effect. Not just downstream, but into other, into other industries as well, because there are lots of linkages on it.
we're not talking as parliamentarians. I don't enjoy that. I used to enjoy it when I was still in the struggle to bring down apartheid. Not now. However, in my closure, and once again, really, really thanking everybody, Honorable Osman, I think we'll hold hands together to mourn it now. And where we stand, fortunately, we're going to have a content advisor who's been appointed today for the committee and a researcher for the committee in December. We're going to assign them to monitor all the work that you're doing, your symposium, your seminars, your workshops, their nature, the topics that are discussed there. Because when you meet you again, believe you me, I'm not going to ask Bamsa and the question that, have you been frank enough? Is the extent to which you have been frank enough in other engagements? You know, you may be invited by Parliament to a platform of this nature, but on the other hand, would like to, when we come together, to share with us the extent to which you have been engaging on your own, even to the exclusion of the department itself, or to its inclusion. I'm quiet now. Thanks very much, everyone. Let's hope we spend the rest of the night and go back home a little bit more inspired. A lot of unanswered questions, which we all have to answer. Ndolebuva, siyabulela. The meeting is adjourned.